Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Academic Life channel here on New Books Network. I'm your host, Dr. Dana Malone. Today, we'll be talking to Eric Franz, a career services professional who currently works as the talent acquisition manager for PrimePay. We'll be talking about his journey in, out, and around higher education. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
We're thrilled to have you and to have this conversation today. So thanks for joining us. Eric, I wonder if you could begin by telling us a bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I was born in Ghana in West Africa and moved here right around the time I became a teenager. So moved to a small town in Pennsylvania called Hellertown, Pennsylvania. And that's where I continued my middle school and then high school education. Being born in Ghana, most of the sports that I played circled around soccer, or they called football back there. So when I moved to the United States, basketball kind of came into the picture around my ninth grade year. So that's what kind of propelled my higher education experience, because I got looked at and to play basketball at a bunch of different colleges, and I ultimately chose Westchester University to attend college. So originally went there as a biology major, but quickly learned that that was not for me. So ended up graduating with a degree in psychology. So while I was in my undergrad, I was on the men's basketball team there. I was an orientation leader. I was an RA. Member of the Student Athlete Advisory Council. So did a couple of fun stuff around campus. And that got me pretty involved and gave me a taste of higher education and the different components of higher ed. So ultimately decided to pursue my master's in higher ed counseling at Westchester University. So did that, graduated, got my first role in a university in upstate New York called SUNY Oswego, where I was the career specialist for fine performing arts, media, and entertainment students. Did that for about a year and a half, and then got the opportunity to come back to my alma mater, where I was the assistant director of the Career Development Center there. So while I was there, decided that wanted to kind of keep going with my education, and got into the higher ed doctorate program at Westchester as well, where I'm currently kind of finishing or in my last year of the program. And then while I was at Westchester, I was there as a professional staff for about 2 years, and then just recently transitioned to the talent acquisition manager position that I'm in now for the HR software company PrimePay.
Okay, great. Thank you. And we'll definitely be unpacking some of that throughout our time together. But before we get into that, what inspired you to pursue career services as a profession?
Yeah. So while I was in my master's program, I got exposed to a whole lot of functional areas in higher education, and I wasn't sure exactly what direction I wanted to go, probably up until right before that last semester in the master's program. And one of the last classes that I took was a career education class. And I really liked the fact that it was kind of one foot in higher education and one foot out, because I felt that the development of the student kind of had to take into account their success and their growth after they leave college as well. So that's something that really interested to me, that I got to be in, I got to affect both areas. So career services kind of came up as that functional area, and enjoyed that part.
Great. Thank you. I enjoy your kind of framing of what appealed to you. I haven't heard anyone kind of describe it that way, but it's very accurate. That is really what you do over there. So that's great. Thank you. So if you would tell us about your first full-time position after completing your master's degree, and how did that experience shape you or inform your career path?
Yeah. So my first full-time position was at SUNY Oswego in upstate New York. And honestly, when I got the call that I got that interview, I did not know where Oswego was. So I actually had to do a very quick Google search to to figure out, okay, where did I apply to this role? Because I have no idea where it is. Ended up being right on Lake Ontario. So it's about 45 minutes north of Syracuse. And at the time, there was nothing holding me back to not venture out there. So it was a great adventure to kind of move up there. And it ended up being a great role. So at SUNY Oswego, their career services kind of runs on an industry-centric model. And they actually won a couple of awards for that model, where there is a career expert for a select number of industries. So there was a business career expert, there was an education and public service career expert, and then there was me, who was the fine performing arts, media, and entertainment expert, quote unquote. So I just focused on the majors like broadcasting, theater, writing, all those fine performing arts industries, and really dove into getting to know the employers in that industry, getting to put on the events, getting to understand the careers in that industry so I could better serve those students. And the students kind of had this person to go to who could either provide them with direction and some answers, or know where to go to get them those answers. So it was pretty much like running your own little career center, which exposed me to all facets of career. Because there's some models where there's just the career coaches, and there's the employer engagement folks, and then maybe there's the event planning folks. But this model kind of had that person doing it all, and it was a great introduction to career services as a whole.
Mm. So you sort of functioned, you did all the roles, but for a very specialized population. Yes. And group of students. Yes. So, oh, great. So after your time at SUNY, you came back to your alma mater, Westchester, as the assistant director of career development. Talk to us about that and where you went from there.
Yeah, so that was more of the role that I told you other career centers have, to where there is the employer engagement team, and then there's the career counseling team. But because of my background and kind of the needs of the role, I was actually in a very similar position to my position at SUNY Oswego, where I was on the employer engagement team as well as the career counseling team. So I got to do both, and it was awesome. So I'd have meetings. I was the only person who was having meetings with the career counseling team as well as the employer engagement team, and then helping put on the events like the career fair, et cetera. So I got into that role in January of 2020. So a couple months later, and the pandemic happened, and that actually morphed my role a little bit into incorporating a few things that I'm passionate about, which is media and marketing. So I was able to kind of dive into more of creating content for our social media to better reach students, because we were in a remote capacity and we couldn't put on workshops, and Zoom fatigue was already setting in probably sooner than we all thought. So
we, 2 years later.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Here we are now. Yeah.
So I had a great manager there who was very innovative and allowed us to be very creative. So I was able to create like a career show that became a lot of my role, was to create a career show based on a variety of different career topics. Videos were about two, no more than 3 minutes long, to hit on certain career topics that students could digest in a short amount of time. So whether it was resume writing, whether it was cover letter writing, whether it was answering certain questions in an interview, how to show up for a virtual interview, a whole bunch of topics, and had a lot of fun doing it. I was able to show my personality on there. Again, was just a fun time kind of creating that content, to where, and my manager just asked me one day and said, is this something you want to be a part of your role? And I said, absolutely, yes. So she kind of recreated a job description based on the strengths that I had, and I just ran with it.
Mm, Well, that sounds like a very wonderful opportunity for you and for them, but to be, to have your individual talents and passions kind of embraced in your role like that. I'm curious, is that something, you know, there's so many things, this is a little off topic, but there's so many things that have been, that people have had to, professionals have had to innovate, you know, through the pandemic that maybe wouldn't have been there before. Is that something like your videos, like video content like that? And not to say people hadn't done that before, but it seemed like that was new for Westchester. Is that something they're continuing?
Yes. Yes, they actually are. So when I first started it, there wasn't really a need for it. But the pandemic kind of changed that. So it started out as a little like career segment called Fridays with Franz. So did that. It was every Friday we would release some career topic, and then push that out, marketed it out, all that. And it got pretty successful to the point where we actually had an employer sponsor that show, which ended up bringing some revenue into the office, and so that was pretty cool. And then after I left, and my dear friend now and colleague at the time was able to kind of take that and create her own segment as well, and so they're continuing to do all that, which makes me very, very happy, because again, it's an access thing as well, right? So if you put on a workshop in a certain classroom at 4 p.m., if students can't make that, and me being a former collegiate athlete, that's something that I just would not have been able to make. But if you have content to where you can direct students to, students can watch that at 4 p.m. They can watch it at 8 p.m. They can watch it two weeks from now. So it allowed us to deliver that career education in a way that more students had more access to. So I'm glad they're continuing to do that.
Yes. And that, I mean, I know from my own experience, that has to be very rewarding when you spend time and effort innovating and creating something. And then if, you know, for when you leave, if it ends, that can be it can be disheartening, but knowing that it's continuing and morphing and people are picking up the mantle and making it their own. And that's really amazing. It sounds like an awesome development out of a difficult situation for sure. So what were some of the factors? And so from there, you is from there, that role is when you moved into prime pay. Is that correct? Where you moved out of higher ed specifically and into more an industry role. So what were some of the factors that influenced your decision to seek employment sort of outside higher ed?
Yeah. So the first thing was, and I think this isn't very it's not very unique to my situation, I should say, when the pandemic really caused a lot of folks to kind of reevaluate what is important to them. And I think I was in that process right around the time we were told to come back in person fully. So during the pandemic, our office, we were able to really work and be productive in a virtual capacity and actually reach more students as a result being in a virtual capacity. So when we were told to kind of go back in person, and it was kind of like a hard, like on this date, we're like starting new. And that kind of brought a couple of things to light in terms of, even though we were in person, a lot of our jobs still functioned in a virtual capacity. So it started to not make a lot of sense after a little while, right? To where I was coming onto campus and still producing those virtual shows in my office as opposed to a corner in my house. I was still having Zoom meetings. So there were people across campus where we wouldn't meet in person. We would still be on Zoom. There were a couple of students that were still coming into the office, but most of the appointments that I was having were in office. The events were still virtual. So it was at the time where we didn't really know how many people we could have in a space, and our spacing issues weren't as kind of tied down yet. So we just couldn't have that those in-person events. So our events were also virtual. So we were in our different offices kind of orchestrating these virtual events that were happening. And it really made me look at that model, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me because I just thought, well, I could do this at home. I don't have to be in this physical space to have that happen. And I got so used to being in this remote work world that it actually opened up a lot of areas in my life that I didn't think were that important until they became important. And since something as little as being able to do laundry, and then something as major as being able to spend time with my mom, and be at my mom's house and still get work done. So when I'm done, I don't have to travel there. I am already there, and there's more quality time spent. So there were all these little things that started coming up that really made me think of, okay, what other roles can I do? Which other area can I get into that still uses these skills that I have learned and that I enjoy doing and that I've built up for it for so long, and I wouldn't have to learn something completely new starting from scratch. And that's kind of what pushed me to that. And the other side of it too was with the work that I was doing and the different things that were going on, I felt that because of the structures that existed in higher education, there wasn't the opportunity for more of a reward, right? So whether or not I went above and beyond and created this show and brought revenue into the office and did all these great things, and the person who kind of did their job and kind of did the bare minimum, we were rewarded the same. And this had nothing to do with my manager. This had nothing to do with the team, because it was out of control because of the union structure that was in place. So it didn't matter the kind of work that was done. It just mattered, okay, if everybody gets a raise, everybody gets it. Like one person can't get a raise over another. So I really started to think of the financial impact on myself as well. And in higher education, it's kind of a taboo to think that, right? Because you're supposed to think of the impact that you're making and the students that you're serving and the great selfless work that you're doing. But I got to a point where I was like, okay, like I know I can make an impact and I know I am making an impact, but when is that impact going to be made on me? Because again, the pandemic had me really think of some priorities and where I wanted to be and the things that I wanted to do. And finances is a huge part of life, whether we want to admit that or not. So a combination of those is what really kind of got me looking elsewhere.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So what has surprised you the most about your transition to working outside higher ed?
That's a great question. I think what's surprising is that
even if it's like personal for you, I mean, you can take that question. That's a broad question. You can take it anywhere you want.
I think something that was surprising was that in like higher education professionals have a very diverse set of skills that other industries, I believe, value more than higher education folks do. And I say this because in higher ed, there's always this disclaimer in a job description after they list all the different things that you're supposed to do that says yes. Other duties as assigned.
Yes.
Right. And I think, I mean, that may have been smart on their part and to put in there, because you're pulled in so many different directions and you get to do so many different things that it becomes part of your job. So the more you grow in there, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're position or your pay grows, because it's already part of your job. That's what you are supposed to be doing. Whereas outside of it, or specifically in the field that I'm in, you have a set of jobs, or a set of responsibilities And then anything else that you do, and you keep track of it and you get rewarded for it at the end of the year. So it's a different system that it took a little bit of me getting used to, that the work that you do and you going above and beyond and doing all these projects actually results in an impact being made on you. So that was definitely surprising. And I think the other thing, I guess the other thing too is that even though I knew that my skills would transfer into this role, there was still a lot to learn because you're learning a whole new organization and a whole new process. So it was more of a learning curve than I anticipated, to where I was very comfortable in higher ed, specifically comfortable in my role, because I was not only did I feel well versed in what I was doing, I was also at a place that I was very familiar with. So even my onboarding process was like very, very smooth, because I kind of knew where things were and who to reach out to and everything. So I came from a very comfortable place to a place where I was forced to grow. And that's something I hadn't experienced in a while. So it kind of woke me up a little bit.
Thank you. I'll just say, I mean, I feel like I could do a whole episode, and maybe one day I will, on the line, other duties as assigned.
Oh, yeah.
I have a friend and colleague in the field, and that is, he has done, and I've jumped on here and there, to professional, sessions at conferences that explore some of those themes of what that means. And I think you hit on something that I think rings true for a lot of folks, especially on, in the student affairs side of the house, where yes, that and beyond, actually, honestly, in administration as well, and all the different places and staff, where that other duties as assigned, where we do, and are expected to do so much and be so versatile in higher ed, and that's just part of the job. And so, I appreciate you highlighting that. I think that. At least I can think of many people in my circle for whom that will resonate a lot. So thank you. So, one of the things that was interesting, and Eric, and I'll be candid here. Eric was a referral from a friend, from Zeb Davenport, who has hosted some on the channel and been a guest on the channel as well. As a contact. And when I was wanting to explore, themes around the whole idea of the Great Resignation. So then when Eric and I spoke, I realized, oh, this is not clear cut. You have not left the field. Because somewhere in the middle of our conversation, he let me know that he was pursuing, his doctorate. And I was like, oh, well, that is a very interesting turn here for me, where I was thinking he was in the field and then he just left the field. So while you're working outside the field right now, you still have one foot in the academy because you are pursuing your EDD. And that to me is a really interesting twist, because you haven't given up on the academy altogether. And you've taken on a very significant, and like that is, a very significant commitment of your time and energy and personal resources to do a doctorate. So talk to us about your decision to leave the field even as you continue in a doc program.
Yeah. I love higher ed, and I still love the higher ed, and I believe in the mission of higher education, and I believe in the impact that higher education can have on their students and their staff and their faculty. But I just was in a situation at the time where I felt that if I wanted to have that impact that I wanted made on myself, the structures that were in place in an industry as a whole. So it wasn't specifically where I was working. It's just what happens in the industry as a whole. If I wanted something to change, it wasn't something that I could change from within. So I had to kind of go out and find what it is that I wanted. But it didn't mean that I like despised higher education, or I despised my time there, because I really believed in the work that I was doing. I believed in the work that my office was doing, and I believed in the work that my colleagues were doing. And something that made me pursue my doctorate in the first place was that I felt that most of the time, a lot of people wait to get their doctorate, which is totally fine. It's for a lot of different reasons, to where, and you have to have some years of experience, and so, and you can apply what you're learning and to the experience that you've had, or whatever, and the reason may be. But I actually consulted with Zeb before I went for it, and I really wanted to go for that degree because I felt that there were certain decisions that were being made by folks that I was in meetings with where it just felt like they were so removed from the student experience, that the decisions that were being made didn't feel like they had the actual student experience in mind. They just had a bunch of theories and a bunch of kind of higher ed jargon in there that didn't make sense to me at the time. I mean, I get them now because I've had some experience in the program, but I just felt like the decisions that were being made were by folks who were so far removed from the student experience, that I wanted to make an impact and not have to wait till I was 40, 50 to be able to do it, where it would feel like I'm two or three generations removed from the students. So I really wanted to go for it. And in going for it, my whole idea is I know higher education is going to have to change. Change is very slow in that industry because that's just how it's always been. But I have hope because I think there's a new generation of professionals that are coming into the field that may not stand for it. And I think there's going to come a time where higher education is really going to have no choice but to adapt and to pivot. And when that moment does come, I will be happy to one day be part of that change that is initiated. So that's part of the reason why I still have one foot in the door. But I also enjoy what I'm learning and I enjoy and the work that I'm doing. So I don't know, like I've always been, I just feel like I've always been in school, whether it's working in higher ed or just taking classes and everything. So that's all I have known what to do. And this is going to be my last go around at it, but I enjoy learning. And I really enjoy making myself better, educating myself so I can be in certain arenas and make an impact in those arenas that I'm in, and getting that degree with those letters before and after my name, I knew would give me a little more credibility to make some of those changes that I know the industry desperately needs.
Thank you. I don't think this is redundant, but because we talked, when we were talking, you kind of, I feel like you had some real clear ideas of how you would use that doctorate in the field in higher ed as in the future. So how do you envision that at this point? And again, I whenever I answer these kinds of questions, I always like the caveat that this could change. You know, if you listen to mm-hmm. this like 2 years later, you know, I reserve the right that my thoughts may change right. and likely will. So I'm giving that caveat to you as well and that mm-hmm. out. But at this point, where you are at the end of your coursework and starting, you know, to dissertate, how do you envision using your doctorate in the future in the field? Maybe like your ideal scenario or you know how you've kind of mapped that out in your mind and a bit.
Yeah. So how I've mapped it out in my mind, and like you said, this may very well change. this may very well change. But how I have it mapped out in my head right now is I think there isn't much of an emphasis on the like student affairs practitioners, right? I think students are a priority at any higher education institution for whatever reason, and faculty are, because students spend a lot of their times in the classroom and they're there to get their degree, and that's kind of the connotational reason as to why people go to college. But I think there isn't much of an emphasis on the student affairs practitioners who do a lot of the work that ensure that and the students stay at those institutions. So I think with the degree that I'm going after and the experience that I'm gaining right now in the talent acquisition world, I think there's going to come a time where higher education is going to have to really put the development and the retention of student affairs practitioners at a forefront, and kind of how to go about doing that. And that fosters an environment where student affairs practitioners feel supported and feel like they want to stay and keep doing the things that they are doing. That's so important to the education and the retention and the livelihood of the students. So that's an area where I have a very good feeling that it's going to happen. I had a former colleague tell me that at their particular institution, they had never had to go out and find talent before, because there were folks who would just apply for the role, interview, have that long interview process, and then get the position and then come on board. And for the first time, they actually had to go to fairs, to career fairs, and like actually had to go out to try and draw talent. And there are other higher education institutions now who have actually started to hire some talent acquisition folks and some recruiters to go help find some of that talent and to bring in. So just posting on those job boards are not enough, and it's already starting. And I think it's going to grow to where now, just like how we really think of students and how to bring students in and retain students and to ensure that they graduate, I think there's going to be more of an emphasis on how do we bring in the student affairs professionals and actually have them stay. And that's an area I think I can definitely impact in the future sometime.
Hmm. Yes. And I would agree from just, you know, from what we're reading, what we're seeing in the field and conversations at conferences and with colleagues that we are there. We are, the tipping point maybe isn't fully there, but we are there. A lot of folks are, you know, the pandemic has just, these are not pandemic induced, issues. These were all, present before. And I think the pandemic has just, amplified and tipped the scales for a lot of folks on some of these issues and these themes that we're seeing that are coming out of the conversation of the Great Resignation. We're here at this. I was going to ask you about, you mentioned the, when we spoke previously, you mentioned a post on LinkedIn that spurred a lot of conversation in your network about switching careers. So since we're kind of talking a little bit about that, would you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I started using LinkedIn probably when I was at Oswego, because it was something that the office really paid attention to and promoted with students. So I started to post content on there. And then when I got to Westchester, I continued doing that. And then when I started in this role as a talent acquisition person, you're also a brand ambassador to your company. So posting on LinkedIn kind of helps that. So I post about different experiences that I'm having, different things that I have accomplished, different things that come up in the role. And when I first transitioned into this role, I put out a couple of posts about the transition from higher ed into this remote role and the things that I have learned and how it was all going. And I had a significant amount of responses, not just on those posts, but also messages that I received. And I have had numerous conversations with folks in higher ed and quite a decent number who have transitioned out since our conversation that I didn't anticipate. So I knew I had those thoughts when I was in my role and kind of wanted something different that better fit my changed values. But I didn't know there were other folks who thought very similarly, like in all areas of the country. Like I had conversations with folks who were out in Colorado, Florida, Alabama, New York, who were reaching out to me to just kind of have a conversation to learn more about my experience, but also help them feel validated. Because again, there's a sense in higher ed where like thinking about yourself feels like a taboo, like no one ever said you and you can't do that. But the selflessness and the impact is what's preached to so many people that that's all you ever think about. And so you think, well, if I want to go to a place where I want to make more money and feel like all this effort that I'm putting in that's making me feel burnt out, if I put a little bit less of an effort in there, I could be paid more and feel more comfortable and be able to pay my loans and be able to just have a better, like better life, or a better feeling to life, feels like I shouldn't be thinking that because students come first or the work that I'm doing comes first. And hearing from all these folks, just because of the posts that I put out there, made them feel a little validated in their thoughts and gave them that push to understand that the skills that they have, like, yes, it's other duties as assigned and they've done so much, but it's such valuable skills. And it takes just articulating those skills and using jargon in the industries that they're trying to get into to help the interviewers kind of frame that, okay, if you're doing this specific role in higher education, serving students, you can do those same skills can be used to serve future clients or can be used to work with other departments in the company, and all these different things that it just takes that articulation to get out and that confidence in yourself to say, like, yes, I may not have done this exact role that I'm interviewing for right now, but these are the different things that I have done throughout my years in higher ed, and showcase them in a way that others see as, wow, you really did all that. And a lot of folks are seeing that as they look at opportunities in other areas. People are seeing the immense amount of skills that they're bringing to the table because of everything that they've done. And it's been pretty cool to see that and to have some of these conversations that I've had, because people are feeling this and the same, and they may not say it all the time, but they definitely are. Mm.
Yeah, the transferable skills are immense, I would say, in what people do in higher ed and especially in student affairs work, and the way they traverse different spaces to be effective with students and then also with colleagues and faculty and all of that. And it sounds like your post essentially was giving voice to the quiet whispers in other people's heads and hearts. Because as you say, you know, those of us who are in higher ed, you know, and I've had many conversations with some colleagues at this point, and I have a little bit on you in terms of time and age. and I would think, and you know, so some of my colleagues that I came up with, you know, it's this idea of, like, you know, the altruistic, you know, values and the greater good and all the reasons that, you know, you get into the field. And, you know, we knew going in, you're not going to get, you know, compensated as much as you would in a private industry, but there are those values, there are those greater good goals and purpose driving your work. But I do feel, I mean, and everything you're saying resonates with my network as well, that people are being pushed beyond. It's really at a tipping point of what people can and handle, and asking those questions about the role of work in their lives, that other quality of life. And so, you know, it sounds like your post, essentially, you gave voice to what a lot of people were thinking, and then people just kind of came out of the woodwork, in essence, to kind of to seek your perspective and to chime in on that conversation. And you know, almost like, are we allowed to talk about, like, can I talk about this? Right. You know, and a lot of times, you know, and professional conferences are this way as well. It that may not be something you're willing to say to the person in the next cubicle or office. Right. But at a conference, you know, when you're with colleagues from across the country, or, you know, even in an online private scenario, you might be more willing to give voice to some things that you're not willing to on your own campus. And so it's a safer space in a lot of ways. So that's wonderful. So thank you for sharing that. So kind of in that vein, what advice or food for thought would you offer to listeners out there who are considering switching careers to something outside higher ed right now?
I think the first piece of advice that I would give is that, like, your experiences are impressive and your experiences are valuable. I think if those in higher ed right now can look at that and believe that, I think that would give that confidence to explore other areas as well. Because I think a lot of times, like, applying for and looking for positions that you've never done before can be an intimidating thing, especially if you're really good in your current role now, because it's like, okay, you've gotten really good at something, and it might have taken months, might have taken years for you to feel like, okay, I know exactly what to do when this situation arises. I know exactly how to navigate this, and to leave that and go into something completely different where you're almost like a newbie. That's something that can be very intimidating. So I would say believing in the skill sets that you've acquired over the years, over the months, however long, and understanding how valuable that is, and that you can make an impact in the right organization as well. So, and you mentioned that altruistic value that a lot of higher ed folks have, and knowing that you're going into an industry where you're not going to make a lot of money in it, but it's the impact that you're making that truly matters. There are organizations you can work for who have that value, where you can both make an impact in using the work that you are doing, but also have that impact made on yourself. So it also takes finding that right organization to go into. And something that I have learned that talent acquisition folks, or at least really good talent acquisition folks, look for is people who are not just running away from something, but running towards something. So as they navigate looking at these different roles, it's important to not just try and hop off the train and land in whatever town you end up in, but actually making a conscious effort to do your research, and really understand the organizations that you're looking at, and getting to know folks in there. When I was looking at into roles, and in the interview processes, I was reaching out to past folks from the company, current folks in the company, people who've been there for a long time, people who just started, to be sure that I was getting into something that I really wanted to get into. Because if it wasn't the right fit for me, I wasn't just going to jump ship just to jump ship. So that's a piece of advice that I would give. But I'll also say I understand how fortunate I was. I had a manager that was very, very supportive and very selfless. So I was able to talk to her about some of these thoughts that I was having. So even though I was working and reporting to her at the time, she was able to kind of separate those and be that supportive person for me throughout that process that I was having. And that's something that not a lot of people have. So I can also acknowledge that privilege that I have, because I know it can be harder for folks depending on the situation that they're in.
Hmm. Yes. Yeah. It sounds like you're very fortunate in that supervisor. So we're getting close to time. And so as we kind of wrap, I wonder, you know, often we don't get a chance to share the stories that really matter to us or that have shaped our lives and put us on the paths we're on. Can you share one piece of advice you received that really impacted you?
One piece of advice that I received that really impacted me. I think the first thing that really comes to mind, and something that really fuels a lot of what I get into in my life is don't be afraid to be bad at something. I think that's what scares a lot of people to try new things and to go at new things. And that's something that I have had to overcome in my own head, and why I'm able to kind of make these jumps and make these transitions the way that I am. And it's with something like, I just picked up jump roping for like these past 2 months. And when I first started, I was absolutely terrible. Couldn't even get a single jump, nothing like that. And just like working at it, I would even post it on my social media and to show the presence. And that can be a scary thing for a lot of people, because it's like, okay, well, it's not perfect, and he's still putting it out there. And now I have significantly gotten better at it. And it's just because I wasn't afraid to be bad at something new. And it's the same with when I moved out to Oswego and moving into an apartment by myself for the first time, and in an area where I knew no one, and being bad at making friends because I had to start over. I was so comfortable in the role and the environment that I was in. Then I had to kind of start new and be bad at doing things for a while until I learned and got better at it. And that's what's really given me the opportunity to do so many different things in my life. So don't be afraid to be bad at something, because you're eventually going to get great at it if you stick to it.
Thank you. Thank you. And if you don't mind, I'm going to use your story with my 6-year-old daughter. We've recently taken jump roping back up again the other day, and she's still working on it herself. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And it's just been wonderful talking with you, Eric. Thank you so much for being on the show today and discussing your journey in, out, and around higher education. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, you are very welcome. And it's been a lot of fun talking about this. Happy to do this anytime.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Dana Malone. This is The Academic Life, and you've been listening to New Books Network. Please join us again.